That actually inspired me to kind of just totally shift what I was saying, what I was talking about. And what's feeling really alive right now for me is the difficulty of always having been a really sensitive person in a world that doesn't necessarily respect that or honor what is sacred, and just how challenging that is. I think a lot of my sex and love addiction has been about trying to find safety and comfort wherever I can find it. And I think growing up without having parents that were really available to me, you know, my mom having a lot of her pain that she was distracted with, and I found out in the past week from a mutual friend of mine that my dad might actually have autism spectrum disorder, which explains so much about how much he was very sentimental about me, but I never really felt like he was present or really saw me. And I also got shamed a lot for my sexuality when I was little, and I got bullied by other kids for the crushes that I had. I even got bullied by some of my crushes. And so I learned from a very early age that, you know, my longings and sources of comfort were shameful and hurtful and inappropriate. And I learned how to do those, all of those things in secret. And as I got older and realized that I could, you know, use my body and my charisma in order to get attention, it really became a source of disassociation, where I could kind of separate the feelings that I had that this isn't really someone that I like or someone that I feel safe with, but someone that I can get high off of, and also a sense of power. You know, I can manipulate people, I can get my needs met. And I developed a number of different like coping mechanisms. You know, I mean, my anorexia has really come up as a way for me to push people away and to deal with making poor choices about partners because I'm not really connected to them anyway. And really fed off of a lot of the abusive drinking that I did because I really wasn't present for what was happening. I'm just getting high. And man, I don't know. I'm really having a difficulty being present and being in my heart right now. A little bit from the day and a little bit from the Zoom bombing. I'm feeling a curiosity about where all of you are at and what's most helpful and what connects most with you. And I'm just aware of the challenge of knowing what to say and how to relate when I'm with a room of people that I don't know really well. So that invites me to kind of feel into what feels true to me. I think what feels true is that my life before recovery had a lot of darkness in it, a lot of despair, a lot of desperation, a lot of longing that felt like inconsolable, a lot of compulsive behaviors that I couldn't stop doing that were hurting me and that were hurting other people. They were pushing away people that I cared about, were giving me a sense of isolation, and a lot of compulsion around doing big, dangerous, risky, exciting things because that made life feel real and feel alive. And
I'm so sorry. Someone texted me to let them in, and now there's people in that I don't know, and I'm going to remove them. I'm really sorry.
Oh, those people are good. You can leave them.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, hang on.
Sorry, I just started removing people. I was...
And Alexandra...
I was just looking for Laura.
Wasn't Alexandra the...
Hey, no, I'm a slaw.
Okay, just sorry. Listening. We just got bombed. Okay. I saw the bomb, and you guys are all handling it very admirably, and Alexandra, okay. Slaw member.
Okay, Nancy, geez, I'm so sorry. Okay, so I locked it again. What are we doing with Laura? Are we unlocking it?
I was just trying to get her in, but if she wasn't there in the waiting room, then...
No.
Lock it again.
It's locked. Okay, guys. Okay. Again, just want to be protective. Sorry.
Okay. This is like a living model of the Serenity Prayer, right? It's like what we can control and what we can't. Yeah, and so I think what really got me ready to work this program, because like many people that I've heard about in SLA, I knew about the program and dabbled in meetings for many years before I actually was really ready to do whatever it took. And the thing that got me ready was realizing that I had gotten myself into a position of social isolation and real financial vulnerability that was giving me a degree of emotional desperation based on all of my compulsions that was really felt life-threatening. I developed a crush on someone that I hardly knew who was not appropriate and was just obsessing and had to break it off and got suicidal because it felt like I had lost my higher power. And I hated myself for not being able to make these relationships work. And just the self-loathing really took me down. And I definitely identify with there being a significant aspect of self-harm in my addiction and in my ways of acting out. You know, when I do something, I don't just feel ashamed of it. Like I want to make the harm worse. And I think there is something so magical about the 12 steps. And I'm one of these sort of like spiritual practice junkies where I've studied teachings and practices with all sorts of different world religions. And what I love about the 12 steps is they're so incredibly practical, but there is such just deep, old, old ancient wisdom just in these steps of getting to this point of saying, I can't do this. This is not working, and I give up. Not in a hopeless way that I want to die, but like I just can't. You know, it's like one of those koan, you know, like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? And it's like the mind gets so into that it just has to give up. I remember getting to a place where I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to have a job where I make enough money to take care of myself with just how exhausting it is to be in my head, in the crazy and in the dark place. And I don't know how I'm possibly going to be able to do this, to do life. And there was something about really getting to that point where I just completely in a wet, sobby mess, just let go, that something shifted and created a little bit of an opening for something new to come in. And I didn't even know what it was at the time. But that's really, and I've had a couple of moments like that in recovery, which feel like such an embarrassing failure to get to that point. But then I realize like, oh, I've been in self-will. Like I'm trying to do this. Like I have to really, really just let myself break apart to be able to really let higher power in and to really start to ask like, what is it out there that is going to help me through this? And I don't know why, but I've always had a sense in my darkest places that the way that I'm suffering is not just unique to me. Like I think so much of addiction is a consequence of living in a society that is so consumerist and isolated, and we're isolated from our families and from nature and from meaning and from being like with their hands in the dirt and like making things. And there's just something about that that's inherently stressful. And I had this sense of like, if I can get through this, like, I'm going to have something to offer to everyone else who's struggling in a similar way. And I can't articulate exactly why that was a higher power moment, but it felt like that. It was like there was something in me that just wanted to know what was next and felt like there was a way through. There had to be a way through this. And how dark my life got really was my moment to do whatever it took. And so that first, like, step three moment of surrender was really finding a sponsor whose life story really eerily, like, mirrored mine, and just being willing to do whatever she asked me to do. And a lot of what she asked me to do was to stop doing all the activities, thank you, Christine, that I thought were good, that I thought were, like, healthy for me. And I was willing to stop. And the pandemic happened, and that really helped with my going into withdrawal. And the other thing that happened, you know, I worked steps 1, 2, and 3 in this program. I started doing step 4 inventory after about a year, and I was really struggling with it. And my sponsor said, I think we need to take you back to step 1. And I was like, no, I don't want to start over. But it was like the smartest thing, because it made me realize, like, how strong that connection with higher power needs to be in order to really do my inventory, to really be able to look back at all of my patterns. And one of the things that I found from doing, like, a really solid, thorough step 2 was that I had this really kind of workaholic idea of a higher power. I had this idea, like, even that thing that got me through my dark point is like, well, what, your life only has meaning if you're being of service and if you're giving back, and you have to give back as much as you possibly can. And I've really struggled with the idea that a life well lived can really just be for me. It can really just be healthy. That this idea that there is a higher power that really just wants me to be happy and doesn't expect me to use myself or be of service in any way. I've had a really hard time wrapping my head around that, but I realized that that was where a lot of my self-loathing was coming from, was this some sort of failure to be perfect, to figure it out, even to recover. And a lot of my journey with program has been recovering that sense of self-compassion, you know, of that gentleness with myself of like, you know what, sweetheart, you are always going to have addictive tendencies. Like, that doesn't make you bad or wrong. That's just the reality of it. And how can you work with that in an honest way to live the best possible life that you can? You know, and every time I slip, it's like, well, of course you slipped, you know, you're an addict. It's not an excuse, but of course that happened. And what can you do now to take care of yourself? Like, why did that slip happen in terms of, like, what was a need that you were trying to meet? And how can you do that differently? And, like, really focusing on all the things that I'm doing well and the change that is actually happening, and having, you know, fellows reminding me of that, because I have such a tendency to focus on the ways in which I'm still not perfect. And so I feel like I have such a simple, practical relationship with the 12 steps right now. They're so just, you know, deceptively rich in terms of, it's really about, like, just being aware of what I'm doing and what my patterns are. And then having a real honest intention to make a change, really being open to, I love the set aside prayer. I've been saying a lot about it lately, you know, help me let go of everything that I know about myself and my addiction and the world. You know, whether that's how bad I am or how great I am or how recovered I am or how impossible I am. It's just, can I, like, allowing myself to really change and transform is scary. Like, that's where the faith is. I have to let go of how I think I am and what I think is possible, and really be open to something new happening, and then being willing to take the action. I love that because it's August, a lot of the meetings have really been reading a lot of literature about the eighth step, which I love. And one of the things that's really struck me recently is an apology doesn't mean anything. You know, it's the action. It's the actions that I take for others, but also for myself. And then just that willingness to trust. Like, I think so much of my addiction shows up as control. I'm trying to control myself and my circumstances so I don't get hurt. I'm trying to control everything to get my needs met. And I think it's a real sign of recovery to be able to feel the vulnerability of there's not very much I have control over. So much of it is trust and faith. And what do I place my trust and faith in? And it really feels like, just moment to moment, can I tune into what really is my best understanding of what I need in this moment, or what's needed from me, from my life, the way that it is, and to just take that right action and just let everything else go. And as I've done that, I've had a lot of really unexpected things happen in my life. Thank you. I'm in a job that was incredibly stressful that I felt like I should have left, but I didn't because I needed the money to pay for healthcare. And my willingness to keep showing up in a new way, doing what I could, has ended up over the past almost 4 years transforming it into almost a dream job where I'm working with these really cool people. So I've been able to hire great staff and the management trusts me and I have a manageable workload. I'm doing interesting work. It's not the kind of work that really like gets my soul on fire, but it meets my needs and it's enough. You know, and on the really good days, I have that grandiosity of like, Nancy, I could be doing so much more in your life. But I'm like, yeah, and I could be doing so much worse. You know, like I have so, so much to be grateful for here. And the other thing that's happened is I started really intentionally sober dating in about December of this year after really crashing and burning in my attempts to get to know people that I was just meeting randomly out and about. I'm like, I feel like I need a sober dating plan. And after 5 years of being in this program, working the steps, being, you know, not dating, really intentionally dating for a couple of months. And I just went exclusive with somebody last month that I've been seeing for about about 4 months ago. We've been together for about 3 months and we've been dating for about 3 months. And the dating plan again was this, it was a way for me to really surrender and to set aside everything that I thought I knew about myself and recovery. My dating plan helped me stay engaged when I wanted to run away, which was pretty much every other week. And my dating plan helped me from getting too close too fast, which I wanted to do every other week. And I got so much support from people saying, because I've heard in program, like, you know it's a sober relationship when you don't get triggered and it feels very calm and relaxing. And I'll call people up and I'm like, this is an effing nightmare. I'm like an anxious wreck. I don't want to see them. I like want to see them. And they're like, you know what? Recovery is not about what you're thinking and feeling. Recovery is about what you're doing. So it makes sense, again, that self-loving, of course this is crazy. Like you have a long history of this stuff being really hard and really scary, and this is your first time opening your heart back up after it almost killing you. So good for you that you love yourself enough, that you want intimacy in your life, that you're willing to risk that and get out there. Of course this is scary and hard, right? But just keep doing your dating plan, like keep doing the right actions. And so now I have this person in my life who is emotionally available. They are financially stable. They're vulnerable with me. They hold my vulnerability. We do a lot of interesting things together. We've done very little physically so far. And he's super cool with the pace. Has got a really lot of really neat friends. And he also has spina bifida. So he walks like a penguin and he's just got some funky things going on. And I feel like what made me think of it was this, one of my coworkers said, you know, when you get older, your odds aren't good and the good ones are odd. And I feel like recovery has really prepared me to set aside all the things again that I think I need and really focus on what is actually important and to be able to have like the emotional fortitude to stand next to this person who is like all the flaws that I've tried so hard my whole life to hide myself from, like he can't, they're right there. And when I'm out with him, there's something in me that has to be like, yes, world, like this is what I choose. And this is actually really awesome if y'all knew what I've been through and where I'm coming from. And to also be thinking every single day, how do I show love to this person who has opened his heart after his own wounds and welcomed me into his life? And how do I show care and respect to that, even and especially when I'm scared or I want to run away or I'm annoyed or I'm grossed out by something? And that for me is a way of making a living amends and making the relationship not about meeting my needs or getting high or feeling safe or any of those things, but about practicing love. So I'll go ahead and leave that there. And I really look forward to hearing from all of your shares today. Thanks so much.